July 19th, 2006. My name is Beth Carmichael, and I'm meeting here in Durham, North Carolina, with Jane Jones to conduct an oral history interview for the Women Veterans Historical Collection at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
We really do appreciate your time and your sharing your stories with us. If you could give me your full name, we'll use that as a test of the microphone and recorder.
Well, I go by two full names, Jane Caroline Jones and Jane Beetham Jones. I used the middle name Beetham because I had trouble a long time ago when I first met a stockbroker, and she said she'd be darned if she'd sell stock to somebody named Jane Jones. So I had to put something in there to make me different from Jane Doe and everybody else. But Beetham is my maiden name, and that's the name I was under in the military.
Okay. Let's start by talking a little bit about your background. Can you tell me when and where you were born and a little bit about your family?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, educated there, raised there, went to school there, worked there, and retired from Detroit, Michigan. And I have a bachelor's and a master's degree. I've traveled a bit, but not in the military. The military, some. But Marine women did not go overseas in those early days. They said, no way, no way. I think the first ones went over after Korea, Vietnam. I think they went to England. But again, remember, you're doing a 50-year-old history, and my memory is not what it used to be. And I've always been in the reserve. And it's interesting, because when they designated that women were no longer separate now, integrated, they put me in a platoon in Detroit, and I stayed there. So my reserve time was out of Detroit. And somewhere along the way, since I enlisted and retired, the USMCR, which is U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, became USMC-R retired. Now, though I mentioned this to a first sergeant one time, and he said, for God's sakes, forget about it. Don't try and go back and correct 50 years of records. So my records all show, and I forgot to bring my ID card. My records show that I'm reserve, but my ID card says I'm retired. Which is true, I'm retired.
Now, before we talk about your military career, can you tell me a little bit about when you were a child, your family, what your parents did?
Mother was a housewife. Dad was a tool and die salesman all through the Depression, which means we always had a car. In fact, the only car on the block, if I remember. The lady next door didn't even have a clock. She used to send me over to my mother to find out what time it was during the day. My father died when he was 36 years old, cerebral hemorrhage. My mother raised my brother and I, 11 and 7, all by herself. She had no job. They were going to buy a house. They took the house away from her. The bank said she wasn't strong enough. Well, she found a job as a clerk at a children's home near our house, and we sustained on that. I remember they had at the village, they called it. The village had a big stock room where people donated clothes for the unfortunate orphans and all this. Mm-hmm. Mother was able to get some clothes out of there, or else I wouldn't have had anything to wear. So my brother and I lived out of that stock room with the boss's permission for many years. My brother was in the Army. He served during Korea, but over on the West Coast in an anti-aircraft, I think it was, battalion. And he came back to Detroit. We lived in Detroit. Came back to Detroit, and the military said he was good at engineering. So he got some tests, and he went to Michigan State on GI Bill. That's where he met his wife, and they have weathered 4 girls, and at one time he had 4 teenagers in his house.
Oh boy.
And they're celebrating their golden wedding anniversary next month.
That's wonderful.
So I'm very happy for him. our usual ups and downs and stuff like this. The only major thing that's ever happened to me in my life, health-wise or anything, was this medicine I got put me in this wheelchair now. And that was about 2 years ago.
Did you go to high school in Detroit?
Oh, yeah. Educated, born, raised, educated, trained, Redford High School.
And when did you graduate?
Oh, good grief. I think it was 45. But don't ask me with my hand on the Bible. It's vaguely at that point.
That's fine.
Then I went to the University of Minnesota for a couple of years.
And how did you end up in Minnesota?
I had a scholarship. There was a scholarship available in Detroit, and I applied, and to the chagrin of my high school principal, I got the scholarship, and his favorite girl, who was much smarter than I was, did not. But I had, didn't plead poverty, but I mean, we had to show what our finances were,
right.
And I guess that's how I got it. But I was a college sophomore then, after the second year. And you know, college sophomores know everything. You know, I mean, you can't tell a sophomore anything.
No.
So I quit, but I quit because I was taking journalism, and after the first year at Minnesota, I came home, I got a job at the Detroit News.
Oh.
And I loved it, but I had a two-year scholarship, so, you know, they said, okay, we'll just hire you for the summer replacement. And I went back to school, and as again, a college sophomore, journalism, I got back to the journalism class, I talked rings around them because I knew a Metro paper, and the... That was funny. I was teaching the teacher at the University of Minnesota about journalism. But anyway, I came home and I went on full-time at the Detroit News. I wrote in every department, even book reviews, intramural sports, nothing big, lots of obits and stuff like that. And they started giving me replacement jobs with various editors, you know, just to fill out and stuff. But they wouldn't put me on staff. They said, we don't want women in our office. I was there, physically,
right.
But we don't want women on our staff. Of course, in that process, the chief photographer's, it was the outdoor editor's daughter was on the staff as a reporter. One of the photographer's wives was on the same staff, and the wife of the city clerk for the city of Detroit was on staff, but they didn't want women. But yeah. They had press cards. Anyway, that's an old story. Don't get me. It puts my blood pressure up to this day.
I'm sure it does.
What was the next?
How long did you stay then at the newspaper?
45 to 53. And I joined the military in 52. And it turns out one of the men on staff, Captain Chakran, Harold Chakran, was in the Marine Reserve. He'd come back from World War II and stayed in the military. And he was also on staff. And so they were forming a women's platoon in Detroit at the Broadhead Armory. And he said, Jane, why don't you try it? And he talked a couple of us into it, plus one of the copy boys and stuff like this. So I went down and stuck on, they took me.
Now, had you thought about the military prior to that?
Well, I hadn't realized it until this came up when I was looking for pictures and these clips for you. When I was in high school, I was a member of the Civil Air Patrol. And you realize, I still have that number, 6323415. I was training sergeant, and for 3 years running, we won the fancy drill competition among
so you
Civil
had
good Air
practice.
Patrol. That was Michigan Wing 63. And then, after high school, yeah, I can believe this, but I joined the Coast Guard. Now, you relax. I worked as a waitress on the passenger boats on the Great Lakes. And to work on the Great Lakes, you had to have Coast Guard clearance.
Oh.
So I have a little card that says I'm a member of the
Coast Guard.
So I have Civil Air Patrol, and I'd forgotten about the CAP. And then I stunned my friends telling them I was on the Coast Guard now. And then... I don't know, I like the neatness. I guess the neatness of military.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a democracy, it's a dictatorship, I admit that. And I chafed a few times on that, but.
How did your friends and family react to this?
None at all. They said, that's Jane.
Whatever you wanted to do would be okay.
Yeah, because I was working. See, I was still at the news, it was an overlap. And after a year to form the platoon. They had to bring in X number of women to form this. Well, about that time, they decided the women were not going to be a separate unit. They're all Marines. So in that picture I showed you, I stayed in the reserve. Two of the gals went into the regulars, and one I don't know what happened to her. So they just split, and they said no more enlistments, no more people coming in. So I stayed in the reserve. Okay. And you're not going to believe this, with 28 years, I never went to boot camp. I visited Paris Island once, but I never did. I had to take my boot camp two summers in a row at Camp Lejeune. And people can't believe that.
Well, how did you get by with that?
They were picking on women. They couldn't at that point. But the others that stayed with me, there were about four of us. And we went down summers for 3 years and got boot camp. And I think this is the reason, because we heard so many stories. They didn't want us at Paris Island because back then, polio was a big scare. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a polio scare at that time, but I can't,
Right.
Hey, you're digging awfully deep here. But anyway, we didn't go to Paris Island, so we got it at Lejeune. It wasn't as hard as the others, I admit that. But it's just one of those things. Now, you're not going to find anybody else saying that, I can tell you, because those other girls that were with me in that picture are no longer in the military.
So you joined in Detroit in 1952.
Yeah.
And
I was still working at the news.
So then where did you go first after you joined, if you weren't sent to boot camp?
No, we were held at Detroit because they had to have 40 women. We had about 26 at that point. And it wasn't that easy. There a lot of people looked down on the military for women, and they got such a bad rap during World War II. So, it's just, I don't know.
How did you feel about that? Did you ever feel from anyone that you ran into that that was a problem?
You mean that I was in the military and they weren't, or something like
no,
that?
No, did you ever
run into old guard Marines who resented women?
Well, no, I don't mean within the Marine Corps, but outside, the perception being so negative about women in the military. Was that something that you ever thought about, or did that have an impact on you?
I never had that reaction from anybody. And I don't know whether it's my positive thinking, but nobody ever got into a debate with me. Mm-hmm. And people had asked me why I joined the military, and I said, I like the way the Marine Corps does things, so I joined. They're orderly, they're dedicated, they're organized, and that's my life. Mm-hmm. That's how I got to sergeant. So at one point here, I met my husband. We were both buck sergeants in the reserve. He came back from World War II, got called up for Korea, and then came back in. We stayed in the reserve. And people say he was a very mild man, very a lovely person, one of a kind. And we were promoted, I think we met a buck sergeant, and then we were both staffs. We were just up for gunny when he died. I lost my train here, I'm trying to think backwards. Oh, well. Forgive me, I've lost track trying to read this track chart.
You were talking about meeting your husband, and you were both...
Yeah, we're in the reserve, in the Broadhead Armory in Detroit. And the comm shack, he was a communications man. And if you know your military history, those are the guys that had to strap the wire reel on their backs and run with the wire.
Mm-hmm.
He's lucky. He hopped in every island of the Pacific. He was fantastic. He had 3+ rows of ribbons by the time he was a corporal.
Corporal.
Wow. Back then, the boys didn't get their first stripe until they had overseas duty. So, and he had several. Every island, duration of 6 months.
Wow.
I got off again.
You met at the armory.
Oh, the comm shack was right next to a little niche they had carved out for me to run the newsletter
and accumulate stories for the newsletter for the battalion. And so I got to know him. You know, he's just a nice guy. And one thing led to another. And he asked me for a couple of dates a couple of times. And no, I wasn't, you know, all these men around there, I didn't want to get playing favorites. And then he did it. He got two lower level playoff hockey tickets for the Red Wings and asked me if he wanted to go out.
Oh, couldn't resist that.
I could not resist. This is, well, you're not from Detroit, are you?
No.
No. Well, Red Wing hockey back in those days was whip snorting. Gordie Howe, Sid Abel, Ted Lindsay, oh, they were the creme de la creme. They were the Michael Jordans, is that the word I want?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordans of Red Wing hockey. And we knew all the names of the hockey players and the scorers, but then he came up with those tickets and I couldn't resist. And that's when I found out what kind of nice guy he was. He died 45, I think, when he died, 46. It's 3 months after he had his annual reserve Marine Corps physical. He had a heart attack.
Oh, no.
Dropped dead. I keep losing the men in my life. I got to stop this.
And when did you get married?
1960. And he died in 72. So I had a wonderful 12 years, but that, I swear I wasn't going to let another man in my life because I kept losing the good ones, you know? My dad and then
and they're hard
and him
to find.
And what else. So, where are we?
We got a little bit sidetracked, didn't
we?
That's okay.
Get me back on.
That's okay. We were talking about how you never went to traditional boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't send you to...
I might take that out of the story. I don't want to jeopardize my pension.
To Paris Island. Instead, you went to Camp Lejeune.
Yeah, a couple of summers.
Where were you in between?
Back at the Detroit News.
Back at the Detroit News.
See, I was still a civilian, legally. I was signed up for the military, and actually it was an 8-year enlistment. And then the... I'm sorry I didn't make notes due to my career. I can't keep track of it. I stayed at the News, the 53. It finally got through my thick head that they were not going to put me on staff. I was making $35 a week, and I couldn't even move out of my mother's house at that point. I couldn't afford it. So I left the Detroit News and took a full-time job with a company I'd been working with part-time because I couldn't afford the salary at the News.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wine shop, gift and wines and big Christmas business. It's all mm-hmm. big stuff now, but these are pioneers in these fancy baskets. And I worked there for, 4 or 5 years. I can't remember. Oh, boy. I worked Christmas there. It was strictly a Christmas business, mm-hmm. you know. So, but then I had the military, when I could get away, you know, and take these summer tours and stuff
right.
like that. And I can't. And then after that, am I still on course here? I left that business and went to, followed an ad in the newspaper, worked for a glass company. I went into public relations.
Mm.
And I worked for the glass company for vaguely 5 years. That was a family-owned business, you know, replacement glass for automobiles. And you didn't rise above supervisor because the family held the directors and managers and stuff like that. But it was a pleasant interval. And what did that take me to? Can't remember where I went after that.
So how did that fit in with your service as a reserve?
All of this from the military, from the newspaper to the public relations, the journalism. I ended up in public information where all the other women had to go into administration in the military. So I broke free.
But in terms of the calendar year, you'd had your summers at Lejeune, in between you're doing these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it worked throughout, that you
uh-huh.
were just there during the summers and then the rest of the year you had these other opportunities?
That's right.
Okay.
So I could work. And then, where did I go in it? Then You're going to be confused with this. Oh, and I got Big Mac. The glass company was 60 to 65, and 65 to 70 was Rockwell International, public relations.
And that was a public relations firm?
That Rockwell International, big automotive, aviation. In fact, they're still going strong. Defense contractors.
And what did you do there, public relations?
I was public relations manager. I had moved up. But again, this all enhanced my military. Because as I say, all the women, when they disbanded the platoon, all the women had to go in administration if they stayed. And that's tedious. Mm-hmm. This is back before faxes. And somebody had we'd go to camp or something, and then I was the admin chief. Oh, I used to hate it because the young men in the platoon would get into those jeeps and tear around the base. They'd overturn them, and every accident report we had to have original and 7 carbon copies. How's that for something to stay in your mind? Oh, it just drive me nuts. But I was admin chief at that point. It was my responsibility. So it was before faxes, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. But all of this background left me in the PIO, which gave me a set apart from the other women who... Where else could they go? Women weren't in the fighting or all the things they are now.
Right.
And it was public information and administration at that point. And one of the things that stood out in my mind, too, that helped me get to this first sergeant thing, when I was gunny, somewhere here, we were at one of the summer training units, and we had to work out an operations order for 400 people, you know, they're going to have beach party, and they were going to, not beach party, an invasion, a landing, and all this stuff, you know, to be very military, get all the troops ready.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the night before, the officers, of course, went off to officers' mess, and somehow they got something bad in their food, and they couldn't come to work the next day.
Oh, no.
I was a staff. This staff sergeant, one other WM, and a man I knew in a motor pool who could type, we came in and wrote that entire op order without an officer in the place. I got a plaque. Don't ask me where it is, but I got a plaque that unbelievable. We did that whole op order. And it usually took half a dozen officers and a whole fleet of typists. And like that. We did it, I think, 4.5 days.
And what was a WM?
Who was it?
What did that stand for?
Oh, Woman Marine.
Oh, just Woman Marine. Okay. I wasn't sure if it was...
Yeah. I remember that. They were chagrined, to say the least, but it knocked out the entire officer corps. But when the plaque, they said that single-handedly pulled out the op order, and of course, you know, something like that on an officer's record is,
right.
You know? I mean, that's terrible.
Right. So after Camp Lejeune, where did you go?
Oh, I think I've been to every base. San Diego, Norfolk, Pensacola, that was a Navy base. Come on.
And did you receive orders every year for that particular summer?
Yeah, we got every year we had separate orders.
And were you still with the same group of people?
Mm-hmm.
So you traveled as a platoon.
Originally, it was the 5th Infantry Battalion, the reserve I was in. And then it was, I guess I don't have it. Okay. Yeah. It isn't on there. Here it is. 5th Infantry Battalion. Is that me? Yeah, that is me.
Is that you?
Oh, we were asked to do everything and nothing. 5th Infantry Battalion, and then 1st Battalion, 24th Marines. And then the staff group, which is composed of officers and any unlucky enlisted they could find to get in there. And then I was with the Air Wing for my last 3 years, four years, with the Air Reserve out at Selfridge Air Force Base in Detroit, in Michigan. So I've been in, it's the same group of people we kind of moved around, except for the last two assignments I got as first and sergeant major, because you could only have one of those in the unit. So everybody steered clear of me. In fact, they asked one man who wanted to be first sergeant, and he got it, and they told him he had to give it back. I've never heard of that.
Wow.
Because they had to keep me there. This colonel that had to give me my promotion, I hope he doesn't recognize himself. He did everything he could to sabotage me, and he was just furious. And I had some college. My husband had only 1 year, but I had almost completed college. And I call him a snot-nosed officer, kept urging me I should be an officer because I've got college, you know, do this. Well, and I wondered how close it was the fact that my husband was not an officer. And see, they could split us up. He's devious because I couldn't associate with him. We couldn't go to camp together. I'd be in officer country. He couldn't get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died, my husband died, they stopped doing that. And it was so obvious. That's the kind of things I ran into, and that still sticks in my throat.
I'm sure it does. Now, where was your husband during this time?
In World War II, well, he said he tried to enlist early in December of 41, you know, the big bush.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you're not tall enough. He was 5'9" And he said, the minute Japanese hit Pearl Harbor, he was tall enough, mm-hmm. and he went. And he signed up for the duration of 6 months. Island hop to every island in the Pacific. Oh, that, you know, the ribbons he had, even struck the regulars, inspector and structure staffs, and anybody that saw him. I mean, those ribbons were unbelievable. And then he came back home, he married, I was his second wife. He married, then got called up for Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And he went off to Korea. By that time, he had a youngster girl. He came back. He was gone for a year to Korea. Came back, and his wife was 6 months pregnant. Needless to say, he divorced. I don't know where the girls are now. I never found out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when he came back from Korea. And then he stayed with the reserves, and there I was. So he was communications. He was an amateur ham and all this kind of stuff in his civilian life.
So you were still in the reserve, and he had gone back to being a civilian.
No, he went back, came back from Korea. See, World War II, and he joined the reserves. They talked him into it. They got called up for Korea. So he came back, and he was still in the reserves.
Okay.
So his was continuous until he died in 72.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So were you stationed together as a reservist during
mm-hmm.
those summers?
Oh, yeah. We had
wherever
a
you
places.
Were, you were together.
One of the first places when we were together was out at, it must have been San Diego, because I remember we went to Disneyland. It was brand new. There's a Disney World out there.
It's Disneyland.
And, you know, who wants to go there? You know, that's stupid, dumb, and the Marines don't want that kind of stuff. One of the other reserve men who was an architect, had gone there earlier, and he finally talked my husband into going, and we went. We were together. We were living off base there. And we went together and was absolutely stunned, and I can remember that. It was just beautiful. But that was my visit to Disneyland, and that was, don't ask me when that was. Anyway, that's one of the stations I had out there.
Mm-hmm.
But his time was continuous.
Same as yours.
Yeah, see, it took me 28 years to get 20 satisfactory years, because it was in pieces.
Right. Right. Now, this group that you were traveling with, the battalion,
mm-hmm.
with men and women?
Oh, yeah.
And did you ever feel
Wait a minute. At first, it was the women alone.
Okay.
But then they had to split up and integrate. And that was the whole group.
Did you ever feel any discrimination because you were a woman? How did the men react?
The old World War II men admitted that when they came back from World War II and found out women had joined the Marine Corps, they signed for immediate reassignment overseas. That was their standard answer. Just some of the old hardliners who were a little too gung-ho for my taste, but for the most part it was accepted. It was just a few. This colonel gave me the buzz on the first sergeant and sergeant major. I really didn't. And I didn't have it in civilian life either. In fact, people say I'm, like here we have volunteer jobs and everything else in the retirement community. And things I'm doing, I organize, you know, see? And they say, Jane, you learned out of the Marines. And I said, no. I said, the Marines do it my way, so I joined them. And I'm an organized person.
Right.
You know, so that's how it all came about.
Now, the people that you worked with when you weren't serving your reserve time, were they surprised to find that you were in the reserves?
I guess it's just my demeanor. You know, I used to stand straight and tall until I got on a wheelchair. But, no, I've had very few people book any, I don't know what you would call it, but either they might have thought it, but they never said it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my eyes were straight and dark brown, and I could go right through you. Dark brown, just like yours.
Well, what was a typical day like when you were...
On duty?
On duty.
Oh, God. Oh, another station was Quantico. I forgot about that. There's another one down there. Oh, Cherry Point.
Mm-hmm.
And Tustin, California. And El Toro. Forgot about that group. Tustin is where they berth the dirigibles that fly over football games and stuff. Those great big airships.
Yeah.
In fact, that's... Was this the one that was out there? No. It wasn't. This is where I got used to getting up early. I don't know what the Marines are going to do, conquer the world at 6 in the morning or 5 in the morning. But we had, we got in some calisthenics, but not once the unit was merged as a, not just women and men, but as a unit. Get up extra early if you didn't get your uniform pressed the night before. See, the first uniforms we had were left over from World War II. They were made out of seersucker. We had to starch them and iron them. You know what seersucker is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the last thing you want to do with seersucker. And the then we went either, like I was teaching or I was on PIO, I'd go over to the public information office. The others, I think, went to admin. And we were assigned a Navy woman who was a photographer. Cute little thing. It's in one of these books I'll show you. And that's where the women were. They were admin or they were public information. Or, oh, I taught, did some teaching at Quantico.
What were you teaching?
Military history. Going over UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's standard. Don't ask me any questions about it now.
Don't worry.
But these were basic things that every Marine had to have drilled into them.
Right.
Marine Corps history, and history was my major after I went back to school at UAD. But trying to think. Yeah, it was admin, public information, and instruction. Those are the three fields. I've done all three of them. But I found my niche in the public information. And then when I did that operations order with two helpers, the report the colonel sent in was like off the wall. I didn't see it. I didn't get a copy. Back then you didn't get tough, you learned. It must have been off the wall because shortly after that, before the sergeant major came through, I was in danger of being out of the Marines because I needed to reenlist again. And I didn't want to go back to that idiot colonel that caused me the trouble. So I called WM headquarters in Washington. I said, is there any place around here that I can get into a unit to complete my service? And this woman said, well, it was a senior woman there, I don't know what. She said, well, just a minute, we'll pull up your records. And first thing she said, my God, this is off the wall. Who are you? And I said, I'm just efficient at what I do. It wasn't 3 days later I got a call from a Brigadier General in the Reserve to come and join the Air Reserve Unit at Selfridge Air Force Base, and you don't think that stuck in his throat.
Mm-hmm.
But he was told by Washington to call me and have me in his unit. Had to be the highlight of my life. So that's how I got out there. And then I finished my term at the Air Reserve.
The Air Reserve. I just wanted to ask you quickly, you mentioned you went to U of D.
University of Detroit.
Detroit, okay.
And when did you go back? I had 2 years at Minnesota and then 2 years at U of D.
Oh, I see. Detroit.
I'm sorry, I keep popping these names on you.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
So as a public information person, what were you doing exactly?
Oh, doing, excuse me. I was writing stories about incoming Marines. Marines have been on duty and coming back. Every summer camp that came into the base, I would write about, you know, stories, send it back to the hometown papers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
it's a lot of articles and
it's all about. I wasn't a photographer, but I was a writer, and it was easy to me. I could sit down at a typewriter and knock it right out without even handwriting anything. And they thought that was fascinating. It was writing the stories, and then afterwards, we sometimes got out of uniform. There's a slop shoot, excuse me, it's a bar on base. And we'd go over there and have a few beers after dinner or something like that. And they had the bowling alley on the base and stuff like that. We didn't have to sell them one off the base. It wasn't worth it. You know, we had everything there. I'd have to get a drink of water.
That's fine. Just a minute.
I went to San Diego and then Pendleton. Oh, there's another place. I forgot. Pendleton. A lot of the men would pile into one car and go up to Las Vegas or Reno. What's closest? Reno would be closest, you know. And, you know, they go up there and blow their pay and come back. I was always nervous because, you know, they're going to drink.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever they had a wreck, many bases did this, they took the car, at least totaled cars, and put them in the median of the entrance and exit gates at the base. And boy, the kids go out and they see that thing. Worked wonders. I don't know who thought up that idea, but it started growing.
Makes a big difference.
It makes an impression.
Now, where did you live? Were you in barracks?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, until I became NCO.
Okay. And what was the setup like?
Oh, let's see. What's what I'm thinking about? I remember a very nice one. It was a converted old house. These are all hangovers. Converted old house with high ceilings, and the whole place had been subdivided into units for two people, two women. And the whole place was all women. And I've been in World War I barracks. I don't know how they lasted that long. But everything was World War II. They were still coming out with it. My husband said when he went into service in 71, 41, that they were issued helmets from World War I.
Okay.
I mean, it all came so fast, they had
right.
Nothing there. And they got K rations, which are horrible. They called them for like canines for the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And World War II was C rats, C rations. And now they're called meals ready to eat, MREs. They have evolved.
That sounds a lot better, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Meals ready to eat.
The only trouble with the sea rations, and I've had my share of them, they were horribly salty.
Mm.
Almost extremely salty. But of course, the fighting was always in warm climes, you know.
So for preservation.
Yeah. Well, and also the men needed salt because they're perspiring with all this equipment they're wearing and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I had trouble getting them down. Mm. Remember, makes me do that.
What was your favorite duty station?
I think Quantico.
And why is that?
I don't know. I guess it's just the level of civility that was there. We, you know, on the bases, you're going to have the downers and the outers, you know, the ones that, you know, they're there because it had to be. Or they came in full of ideas and they all popped on them. But Quantico, in the instruction, and I helped rewrite all the lesson plans when I was there. That was a special duty. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And the people were intelligent, and there were visitors from all over the country. In fact, they had people from overseas that came in for training at Quantico. And the FBI came down there. They had a range down there and everything else. Mm-hmm. It was a smaller group. It was not like being on a big base, because mm-hmm. it is big, but it was a transient population. And they were just terrific people.
And how long were you there? Or how often, I should say, were you there?
I only had one tour there.
One tour.
Yeah, I can't.
And how long did each tour last? Were they all 3 months?
Who knows? Who knows?
Or did they vary?
I've had some 3 month tours. I've had been called up for special exercises for 4 weeks. Oh, where was that other one? Another place I was. We had an all service exercise in Virginia. Must have been Norfolk. It was a big operation. I was assistant to the chief of staff, to the general, and which means I kept out of the way. And we had Army, Navy, Marines, didn't have the Coast Guard, State Department, Foreign Service people. It was a full-bore military all-service exercise. That was fascinating.
And what did you do? What does that mean, full-service exercise?
Oh, it was a LOGEX is what it was called. LOGEX, L-O-G-E-X. All I know is that I kept out of the way, but I was there when they needed me. And I by that time, I was versatile. You know, mm-hmm. I could do many of the jobs. Heck, after doing an op order all my practically by myself, now the tours were, I was called on for something executive. All these operations had names, you know, the Operation Afghanistan, Operation this, and Operation
right.
that. And so many different ones, I can't remember.
Was it primarily higher-ranking officers, or were these large bodies of servicemen for these exercises?
Well, now I don't know. Because I didn't get out with the troops. At all. Women,
okay.
I mean, even then, women weren't out with the troops or anything. But we did the paperwork that was necessary to put this thing, to show that a joint service exercise would work.
I see.
And that was interesting. I remember that, but don't ask me the details on it. Because it was almost an 18, 20-hour day. We stood. I mean, this was, I think it was a preparation if we were invaded. All the services and the intelligence and everybody working together. I mean, it's a pretend thing. But I remember long days. And oh, they even had reporters come in trying to get information and spy on me, you know, and stuff like that. It was interesting. But, yeah, I forgot about LOGEX. And my colonel there, I was his assistant or chief of staff or whatever you want to call it. Colonel is the one that gave me this off-the-wall fitness report when they turned in after the exercise that got me back in the service. He gave me, I never saw it, but it must have been A's or number ones all the way through. That stunned that woman in Washington. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did get a side trip to St. Louis headquarters for the Marine Corps. I mean, what do they call it? It's called the Defense Finance and Accounting Service now, and it's in Cleveland, but it was the headquarters where all the records were kept. And it was the 9th District headquarters for the Marines, I think. Don't quote me on that. And the inspector instructor, who did not like women or women Marines, said, here are your orders for St. Louis and a voucher for your travel. No arrangements had been made. I went by myself. He sent me down there. He was going to send me down there with cold. And I realized that wasn't going to work. So I called the senior woman on the staff down at headquarters, or at the 9th District in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Senior woman, told her what I'd run into, that I'm being sent blind, no allowance, no nothing. And I said, you've got some place to put me, hide me? She found a woman Marine and her husband living on a base, they took me in their spare bedroom, and what little allowance I got, I didn't get it away pay or duty pay, what little I gave to them, and I said, that's the best I can do. But that's one of the treatments I got from the old guard. But that was hard. I remember that. And then I went down and worked in the public information while I was down there.
And where was this?
In St. Louis.
In St. Louis.
That's another place I worked, St. Louis. I was just doing clerking work down there in their publications office. And one of the writers had interviewed somebody, and he had a hard time getting going on his story. So he went out to get a drink of water. And I sat down with his typewriter, and I gave him a lead on the story. And he came back, and he said, who did this? And I said, I did. He said, how did you do that? And I said, I've been working on the Detroit News for years, you know. He said, you're hired. And I was right on the staff of the monthly magazine before you turn a head around. So it worked out pretty well. But that colonel that sent me down there, he hated women. Oh, I guess I have had some run-ins, but I took it, and he was amazed. I had a wonderful time and got a great fitness report. Oh, that made him madder.
Regular Marines as a reservist?
You couldn't tell when you're on base if somebody was a reserve or a regular.
Regular.
And that's about their assignment, you might know.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, the uniforms are all the same. Mm-hmm. And I got out of that habit of being worried about wearing the same dress somebody else had. I wore the same dress that a couple thousand women had. Yeah, no. I mean, you really couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. And maybe that's just the attitude we all had, you know.
So even within your assignments, not just running into people on base, but within your assignments, you were working with regular Marines.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
It was a mix. Especially on that joint service exercise I would tell you about, LUGEX.
Mm-hmm.
There were reserves and regulars and the State Department, and you couldn't tell one from another. You could tell the reporters because they had cards in their hats, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of jazz. Okay.
What was your last duty station? Where did you retire
from? I ended
from?
Up in the reserves, in the Air Reserve and Selfridge Base. That was the end.
And that was 1980.
Yes. That's something. Thing.
How did the war in Vietnam affect your work in the Marines?
I'm trying to put the dates down.
You came in as Korea was ending, but then...
Yeah, I came in 52, and in 53 they signed the armistice.
Right. But you were really involved with the Marine Corps throughout the entire length of the...
No, uh-uh. The Vietnam War, Korean War, ended the year after I joined the platoon.
Right, but so, in terms of Vietnam, you really saw the beginning, the...
Oh, the whole thing.
The whole thing. Did that have an impact on your work?
No, it didn't. No. The only impact... And this is a funny one. You can end up the whole story with this. About... 3-4 years ago, when all this was starting over in Afghanistan and all that, the military, the Marines, I know for sure, sent out notices to all honorably discharged Marines, would you like to come back and re-enlist? And I said, I wrote on the bottom, I said, if you need an over-the-hill sergeant major, blind in one eye, deaf in one ear, one, something else, or some two or three others. I said, you're in better worse shape than I thought. I never heard another word. I wish I had kept a copy of that. That was my pride and joy. Oh, yeah. Forgot that. That's me.
Another picture of you?
Yeah.
That's neat.
Okay, this is my junk.
Well, what did you do after you left the reserves? You were
that
back full-time
52.
To civilian.
No,
in
80. Oh, I went to work for the city of Detroit. And I got some better's preference. In fact, the boss told me when he hired me, he said he went back and filled the staff, they filled that spot, And he went back and said, she's a Marine veteran. And boy, he said, how they expected somebody to come in like this, you know. Here's all 120 pounds of me coming in. But outside of that, and when I get a little bossy, they always used to remind me, come on, Marine, down, down, you know.
And what were you doing?
Public information. Yeah, newspaper work, writing releases for, there were about 8 or 9 departments. Building and safety engineering, health department, and all these other departments. Something great happens, you promote it and send it out. Mm-hmm. And it worked out fine. I worked there until I retired in 92. I finally told my boss, it turns out the man that lived in another, worked in another department at the city, said he knew where I lived, a young Asian Indian. And he said, do you know if there's any house for sale in your area? And I was thinking, oh my God. And I said, let me check. The next day I went and told my boss I'm retiring. I had to work past retirement. He was hanging on to me. And I said, I'm retiring. The next day I went back and talked to the kid. And I said, my house is for sale. I didn't even have to hire a broker. It's just smooth as punch. And about that time, for 80 and 90, I had been caring for my mother's older sister who lived in Arlington, Virginia, and I lived in Detroit, and every weekend for 8 years, I flew to Washington.
Oh my goodness.
She died 2 days after I retired. So I packed up all my stuff, put it in storage, went down to her place in Arlington. I was her executor. Spent 3 months trying to get that straightened out, and then I called up the force and said, I'm ready to come. She said, oh, you have to be scheduled. And I schedule me. I'm coming down. I'll park in the street. So they scheduled me, and I came in here November 7th in 92.
What was the hardest thing you had to do physically during your time in the reserves?
Hold my temper.
And what about emotionally?
Well, you can see I've had some run-ins.
Dealing with your colonel.
But my blood pressure wasn't up. My blood pressure showed up the day I took my exit physical for the Marine Corps. I came in on a Saturday morning, and as Sergeant Major, I was in, you know, before the troops, and half of them weren't under the wake. And my physical was scheduled, you have the end of service physical, and my scheduled physical was scheduled for about 8 o'clock. Well, of course, by that time, I had about 7 cups of coffee. I went to get my physical, and I guess it went right off the chart. And he says, Sergeant Major, the doc, Sergeant Major, why don't you come back tomorrow and don't drink all that coffee first thing? So I got out of the Marine Corps with my health intact. But that was the first time my blood pressure showed up, and I've been had it under control ever since.
What were the biggest changes that you saw in the Marine Corps over the course of your service?
Acceptance of women. They're still old guard, but and the civilians don't look at you like they did. They never said anything to me, but you could say, oh, the Marines, you know, oh, military, but they never said anything to me. But I think it's a lot more accepted. There's still going to be exceptions. You've got your hard-nosed Marines and you've got your stiff-necked lady Marines, you know. Sometimes they just don't go together, but I love them all. I have no problems with that. But biggest change? I'll tell you one thing, the uniforms. Oh, shish. I went through 3 uniform changes. The seersucker, the nylon, and the wool. And all of them were uncomfortable. That nylon was a one-piece dress. Can you imagine getting women into one-piece dress with a set-in belt and you had a bucklet?
Certainly not very flattering.
Oh, ooh. Boy, I can remember those uniforms. That's the biggest change I've seen in the Marine Corps.
But they didn't necessarily get more comfortable.
No, nylon and that heat down, and most bases are south, you know, there's no bases up north.
Do you consider yourself to be an independent person?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Ask any of my friends.
And did the military make you that way?
Nope. I joined the military because they do things my way, and I admit it.
Did you feel that you were a pioneer or a trailblazer when you entered the service in terms of women being a part of the military?
No. The ladies had already done that late in the 43, 44 when the women were, they took the brunt of it, and that was hard. And I I don't know whether I could have handled that because I'd have blown up, because that's just my way. But they were the pioneers. They did the ice breaking. By the time we came along, others were tired of harassing us. They said, "Oh, leave those gals."
Would you recommend the service to a young woman today?
Mm-hmm. I definitely would. And it's something to think about. You get enlistment bonuses. You get re-enlistment bonuses. You get your college paid for. I mean, where in the world can you get that? If the circumstances were like this now and I was eligible, I'd join. I think it's fantastic. And now that I'm a honorably discharged veteran with 20 years of satisfactory service, although it took me 28 years to do it, I have what they call TRICARE for Life, medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And before I retired, I had Michigan Blue Cross Blue Shield, which once I moved down here seemed to be reluctant to pay for anything. I mean, I was forking over right and left. Then TRICARE came in a year ago, October. It came in October, and the colonel who was here in the Army, he says, "Jane, you better sign up for that. That's great." I haven't paid a cent in medical bills since I did. Mm-hmm. I dumped the Blue Cross, and that's a whale of a benefit. And I can't say what that means, especially at my age now.
Right. How do you feel about women being on the front lines the way they are now, being in more combat positions than previously?
Well, that's interesting because until recently I had not much trouble. In fact, there, a couple of times I'd like to take in a rifle and shoot. I was a champion, you know, rifle range. Spent my time at Camp Perry practicing. Well, let's do it in reverse. The Army has now had trouble with the military and enemy women. They're attacking them, they're assaulting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the women in the front line invite trouble. They cause more trouble for the guys who are fighting. Even if they're fighting, they don't have the physical stamina to do it. I'm all in favor of women piloting airplanes, driving tanks if they want to, firing howitzers, anything else. But front line, the men are going to try and protect you if you're fighting by their side. And that takes their mind off of the big thing. And there are more men than there are women. And they're going to do that, and they're going to be concerned. And even if they don't like the dumb woman, they're going to make sure she's safe. And I think that's a hazard to the men. The front line is the only one job. They can fly airplanes, they can go off of carriers, they can do anything. Mm-hmm. But front line, no. And this is interesting because when that was passed, that Dakowitz, have you heard of Dakowitz? Mm-hmm. One woman here was on Dakowitz.
Oh, really?
Margaret Rose Sanford. Her husband was Senator Governor Sanford here in North Carolina.
Oh, right.
She was on Dakowitz. And I never said another word once I found out. But it was Dakowitz who said women should be able to fight, and that it's a natural human instinct to protect your buddy. And unless you've got at least two women in the unit, that woman is alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one job. Of course, if we get mad enough, we could all pick up weapons and shoot their heads off. You know where they say female of the species is the deadliest? No, that's the only one. I don't agree with Dakowitz, and I don't agree with that situation. Well, wasn't it that gal got captured?
Mm-hmm.
It was a Marine, wasn't it? Where's the Army?
Anyway, Army.
But they were going nuts trying to get her out of there.
Right.
And they took them away from their duties, and they weren't protecting their own backs. No, I don't think that. As women do not have the physical stamina. I mean, might be a little exception because I was pretty healthy and physical. And I still am sometimes. But that's the one thing I don't think I like that change.
Well, I don't have any more formal questions. Is there anything that you wanted to add that we didn't cover?
No, but it's a badge of honor to say I was in the Marine Corps, and it really impresses people. And then mm-hmm. I tell them 28 years, and they draw back. And that's when they say, "Well, now that explains why you're so bossy." And I said, it has nothing to do. I joined the Marines because I liked the way they did things.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Beth.